Programming is supported by Topline Construction Firm, your local women-owned roofing contractor based out of Shoreview, Minnesota. Roof replacement, both retail and insurance work. More information at toplineconstructionfirm.com.
Good morning. This is NPR News. I'm Mark Zadaklik, filling in today for Carrie Miller. Did you watch the debate between Donald Trump and Hillary Clinton last week? More than 84 million of us did, making it the most watched debate in American history. Tonight, it's the vice presidential candidates will be on stage. And over the next hour, we're going to be talking about Republican Indiana Governor Mike Pence and Democratic Virginia Senator Tim Kaine. And we hope that you'll be part of the conversation. In January, one of these men will be next in line for president, but over 40% of Americans can't name the VP candidates, according to a new ABC News poll. That could all change tonight as Kaine and Pence go head-to-head in a debate at Longwood University in Virginia. But the Democratic and Republican nominees are not expected to draw record-breaking numbers like Hillary Clinton and Donald Trump did. Throughout the hour, we want to hear from you as we talk about tonight's debate. Are you planning to tune in? What will you be watching for and listening for? Is there something that either Pence or Kaine might say that could sway your vote? Call us and let us know what you're thinking at 800-242-2828 or 651-227-6000. You can also tweet me at @NPRNews. And Steph Curtis is monitoring the conversation online at nprnews.org/live. So what's at stake tonight for the Clinton and Trump campaigns as their VP choices go head-to-head? University of Virginia history professor and co-host of The Backstory with the American History Guys, Brian Ballow, is on the line from Charlottesville, Virginia this morning. Good morning, Brian. Thanks for being here.
Good morning, and congratulations on the Vikings victory.
Need a kicker, though, I think. But back to politics. How big of a deal is this debate tonight, do you think?
Well, I think it's kind of a big deal, not in terms of how many people will watch it, as you pointed out. It probably won't be record-setting. But because it's been such an odd presidential campaign, I think the vice presidential candidates are in the unusual position of needing to spell out the policy positions of each presidential candidate, and even more than that, spell out the positions of each party, which have not really been well articulated.
To what extent do you think that these vice presidential candidates have kind of been really overshadowed by Hillary Clinton and Donald Trump? They seem to just really be operating kind of in the periphery right now.
Well, by historical standards, they've been very much overshadowed because the one time, speaking over the long course of history, that vice presidential candidates are noticed at all is during the election. In fact, up until well beyond World War II, vice presidential candidates were pretty much, the election is pretty much what future vice presidents did. They got totally ignored once they were vice presidents, but they would be chosen because they were a favorite son or they added geographic balance to the ticket. So they were kind of noticed during the campaign, not so much in this campaign.
What do you think, briefly, are the goals the two sides have set for themselves going into the debate? What does Governor Pence need to do and what does Senator Kaine need to do?
Well, I think Governor Pence needs to demonstrate that there are some reasonable voices on the Republican side of the aisle and articulate policies that could be very popular with the American public in a year, labeled a change year by the pundits. I think what Tim Kaine needs to do is continue the momentum that Hillary Clinton was able to garner in her first debate with Donald Trump.
You're listening to NPR News. This morning, we're talking about tonight's vice presidential candidates debate. Brian Ballow is here from the University of Virginia. For much of the rest of the hour, we're going to go in depth on the vice presidential candidates, starting for the next 20 minutes or so with Democratic Senator Tim Kaine, bringing into the conversation right now from the University of Richmond, a humanities professor and a co-host of Backstory, Ed Ayers. He's in Richmond this morning. Good morning, Professor Ayers.
Good morning. How are you today?
Wonderful. How are you?
Oh, great.
One of the chief criticisms of Clinton is that many voters feel she's dishonest. Kaine has a reputation for being authentic. Are his positives enough to counter her negatives? And what will he be doing tonight?
Yeah, you know, I have to admit, I've known Kaine for a long time. I was president of the University of Richmond, and he was governor, and our paths would cross. And And so, in all honesty, I'm kind of a fan. I watched him get started here as a lawyer working on behalf of equal housing opportunities, not really the path toward glory, and for a long time just subordinated himself to the greater good. It's remarkable, really, how much people like and admire him in the city. And so I just want people in Minnesota to know they should discount what I'm saying, because I've actually seen him with my own eyes.
I always discount what you're saying.
Well, thank you, Brian.
All right. We're talking with University of Richmond Humanities Professor Ed Ayers and also Brian Ballow from the University of Virginia. He's a history professor there. And we'd like you in on the conversation. We talk about tonight's VP debate. The number is 800-242-2828. If you're in the Twin Cities, you can call us at 651-227-6000. You can tweet us at @NPRNews. And also, Steph Curtis is watching what's coming in online at nprnews.org/live. By any measure, Kane is a political insider. He's been in politics for more than two decades, city council, governor, chair of the Democratic National Committee, U.S. Senator. Is that a mark against him, Professor Ayers? What do you think?
Well, you know, normally it would be, and yet when you meet him and you see the jokes that people are making on John Oliver and Colbert and stuff, he somehow doesn't come across as slick. I'm not exactly sure how he manages to pull that off to be a political insider for two decades, and yet not really seem like he is one. He seems kind of perpetually surprised that he's in these positions of authority, even though he succeeds in them.
What was he doing when he was governor of Virginia? What did he accomplish, and what might that tell us about his kind of political philosophy and that, all the rest?
Well, he was governor during hard times, you know, when the economy was down nationally. And a large part of what he did was to try to just hold things together. He prides himself on being bipartisan, even though he is, as you said, a Democratic insider. In many ways, one of the important things he did was he led an apology for slavery, an important part of Virginia's history. And I think a lot of people look at this and say, well, you know, it's hard to see how that's just political gain. That looks as if that might actually be character and risk. And so I don't know that he was able to accomplish, and Virginia is the only state in the union where governors are prevented from succeeding themselves, so that they start running out of time as soon as they begin with 4 years. And so I think that Kane was looking for the big symbolic things that he could do during his time as governor.
And I suppose that he's exposed on that to a degree, then, if he doesn't have a big list of accomplishments.
Yeah, I think his accomplishments come from, as you said, working up every step of the ladder and becoming a popular mayor in a city that has a kind of a polarized racial environment. Kane was popular among both black and white people, as well as the new immigrant communities in town. When you see him speaking fluent Spanish, just sort of at the drop of a hat, it kind of gives another element to his character. And when you see him pull out a harmonica and play blues and rock, it's a kind of another surprise. For a guy that's supposed to be boring, he actually has a lot of facets to him.
I was going to ask you about that, because, you know, that is his own description, that he's boring. He runs around saying that. Has he been able to inspire the Bernie Sanders supporters to get behind Hillary Clinton? And is that sort of his main goal right now?
Well, he's not actually boring, but I also don't think he's been able to inspire the Bernie Sanders supporters. I think they would see him as a kind of, a local version of what Hillary Clinton's about, which is, you know, getting things done but working in the system. Kane is not really a rebel, even though he's constantly pushing at the system to be as good as it can.
That is Ed Ayers. He's a professor at the University of Richmond, a humanities professor. Also on the line, Brian Ballow from the University of Virginia. Professor Ballow, historically, how does Tim Kaine kind of measure up to past Democratic VP choices? Does he stand out, I guess, for not being, you know, so well known and that kind of thing? Or is this pretty typical?
No, I think it's pretty typical. I mean, vice presidents are not always stars in their own right. One thing that distinguishes Kane a little bit compared to recent vice presidential picks is he is from a swing state. Now, it looks like Clinton is comfortably ahead in Virginia right now, but traditionally, certainly over the last 20 years, Virginia has been considered an important swing state. And, you know, for a while, vice presidents were picked from very safe states. So Kane's a little bit different in that regard. I also think he's a little bit different in terms of having built his reputation largely on state and local politics, although, of course, he's a U.S. senator. And but again, we can find precedents for that without going too far back. It wasn't a terribly successful precedent, but Spiro Agnew built a reputation on local and state politics.
How big of an opportunity is this for Democrats and for Tim Kaine to try to bring folks that might not be real enthusiastic about Hillary Clinton into the fold?
Well, you know, that is the job of a vice presidential candidate. So, of course, it's a huge opportunity. I think that especially if Kaine can channel the kind of work that he did in Honduras, working with Jesuits down there in a school, the kind of passion and the kind of do-gooding, frankly, that Professor Ayers just referred to. I think if he can channel that and target it towards former Bernie Sanders supporters, I think he can help turn out the vote among some millennials for Hillary Clinton.
Ed Ayers, where is Tim Kaine vulnerable? There was the reporting that he accepted $160,000 in gifts when he was governor and lieutenant governor. They were legal, but is that an area of vulnerability for him? And if it is, what else is might be problematic for the senator from Virginia?
Well, we don't hear too much about that. I don't know that that's a particular vulnerability because he's not he lives in the same house for the last 30 years, and if he's getting a lot of money, it's not showing up very much. I would say that the conflict that he will need to resolve is he's a devout Catholic, but in the Democratic Party. And so people keep pushing, so what do you really think about abortion? And you know, he says that he does not personally support it, but that he recognizes the limits of the state's power to limit it. So I think that you'll see people pushing on that, wanting to know if he's being consistent with his personal beliefs. You know, he was a missionary, and so he's very very forthright in his religious faith, but he's also forthright in his democratic principles, and people are wondering how he might reconcile those.
We're talking about tonight's vice presidential candidates debate. Ed Ayers is on the line from Richmond, the University of Richmond, and we also have Brian Ballow from the University of Virginia. The debate will be, by the way, live on Minnesota Public Radio News at 8 o'clock. You can tune in for that, and then also fact-checking at nprnews.org. And then at 10 o'clock, a live nationwide call-in special from our partners at The Takeaway. So a whole bunch of vice presidential debate programming coming up on NPR News. Do you think, Ed Ayers, that the Clinton campaign has tapped into Kaine's strength effectively, or could they be doing more?
Yeah, I don't think people really know Kaine at all yet. And in many ways, as Professor Ballow was saying, he has values that a lot of people are looking for in a president. He is both ambitious and modest. He's very intelligent and yet doesn't sort of showboat on it. He has shown year after year that he's dedicated to the Democratic Party's principles of equity and of a government that tries to make things work for everybody. You know, when people remember that he was the governor during the Virginia Tech shooting and see how it was that he led the state through the traumatic period and how he went to Blacksburg in person and helped, you know, bring people together, I think people will like what they see and actually see it as a compliment to Clinton's personality.
What's your sense as to the ratings for this? How many people are actually going to be paying attention to this? Is it going to be half the 84 million that were watching the Clinton-Trump debate last week? Or what's your money say on that?
I would guess that it would be less than that. As it turned out, I visited Longwood last week and spoke to 700 middle school and high school kids who were there participating in this sort of civic thing. And, you know, you could sort of see that it was exciting to have the CNN trailer there and all that, but they're not exactly sure what this all means. I think that the people who will watch it are the people who are already informed, unfortunately. And I think that the effect of it's going to come from the media coverage of it, when people will be able to say, okay, here's the generally the way that it came out. So I think it will be important. I don't know that it will be important from the people who are watching it in real time.
And Ed Ayers, what would you advise Tim Kaine to do if you were in the back room with him before he was going out on the debate stage to meet the country?
Well, I'd say keep your harmonica in your pocket. But on the other hand, I think if he will actually just speak the way that he always does, that he will connect with people. He is simultaneously a strong Democrat and not a very partisan figure in his demeanor. And I think that people are hoping that there's somebody in this mix that can help put the country back together. I think they'll see that in Tim Kaine.
And people have compared him in style to Mike Pence. Do you agree with that? I mean, they're not, neither is sort of the big showboat.
I think that's fair to say. I mean, their policies could hardly be more different. However, that's what's surprising, that the personalities may be alike and their religious faith have parallels. But I think people will need to look really hard at what it is that they've actually done while they're governor and what it is that they're promoting as vice presidential candidates. So I think appearances can be deceiving on this front.
And finally, I know you have to go soon. Yeah. Professor Ayers, what will you be watching for from Kaine tonight?
Yeah, I'll be watching to see if he is the Tim Kaine that I've seen on the local level, where he's connecting with people, or whether he has been encouraged to play this kind of, attack dog mode, which is not his strongest suit. And so I'll be looking to see, if he is being able to be the authentic person that I think is his greatest strength.
Very good. Well, Ed Ayers, thanks a lot for being here this morning. We appreciate it.
My pleasure. Bye-bye.
Ed Ayers is a professor of humanities at the University of Richmond, joined us from Richmond this morning. We still have on the line from the University of Virginia history professor Brian Balow, and we're talking about the vice presidential candidates debate. We want you to be part of the conversation. You can get in on it by calling 800-242-2828 or 651-227-6000. Steph Curtis, you've been online.
Yeah.
A little bit of traffic of people talking about this. What are they saying?
Yeah, so at mprnews.org/live, Eric wrote in and he said, I think of these candidates as vanilla and vanilla light. Do your guests think that either of the VP picks have anything to bring to the table that might change a voter's mind when the presidential candidates are so polarizing?
Brian Balow, what do you make of that?
Well, first of all, vanilla is one of my favorite flavors, so maybe I'm not a great person to answer this. I actually think that they both bring a lot to the table. They bring both experience in governance, Tim Kaine a little more than Pence, and they also bring experience at pursuing some important policy initiatives, but doing so in a way that does not necessarily alienate their colleagues, whether it's in the Senate or whether it's in local government. And I think we need more of that in governance. They most, and you alluded to this, Mark, they both come across as very reasonable people. They bring to the race two candidates who don't have nearly the high negatives that both of the presidential candidates have. They bring to the race two people that one could imagine voters, depending on their partisan leanings, getting behind and liking and giving voters a reason to turn out and vote, even if they have some doubts about their party's lead candidate for president.
Right before he left, Professor Ayers said that he thought the viewership would be probably less than half of what the people that turned out to watch and listen to Hillary Clinton and Donald Trump. Why is it, Brian Balow, that we're not apparently that interested in vice presidential candidates, given what's at stake? I mean, these folks, as we noted on the way in, one of them, come January 1st, will be next in line for the presidency.
Well, we live in a celebrity-centered society across society, and politics has become even more celebrity-focused. We have a candidate running for president who, in essence, has risen to the nomination through his celebrity. And let's face it, people don't chant at football stadiums, we're number two, we're number two. We are a country that is obsessed with number one, and the president is that number one. Second, it has been a while since tragedy has befallen the president. It's been a while since we've had a vice president step up to the presidency, either through tragedy or a different kind of tragedy, such as Richard Nixon's resignation from the presidency. So people have good reason to feel, well, it really doesn't matter. What they may not understand is that the vice president has become a pretty important role in and of itself. It's really changed historically. And certainly Dick Cheney was very influential in making the vice presidency a much more powerful office. But that trend began long before Cheney, probably with Richard Nixon himself, when he was the first vice president to serve for two terms. You'd have to go all the way back to John Adams to find that.
Brian Ballow is with the University of Virginia. He's a history professor there and joins us this morning from Charlottesville, Virginia. He's going to be back here in a few minutes, and we're going to then turn our attention to vice presidential candidate, Indiana Governor Mike Pence, and talk a little bit about his background. First, though, now it's off to the news, and Phil Picardi. Good morning, Phil.
Good morning, Mark. Hurricane Matthew has roared ashore in western Haiti with maximum winds near 145 miles an hour. The Category 4 storm is pounding the southwestern coast of Haiti, where many people live in fragile shacks of wood and corrugated steel. The storm is headed toward Cuba and the eastern coast of Florida. Philippine President Rodrigo Duterte is hurling more insults at President Obama. Duterte was responding to U.S. criticism over his deadly anti-drug campaign. Some 3,000 suspected drug dealers and pushers have been killed in 3 months in the Philippines, alarming the UN, the EU, and the U.S. WikiLeaks founder Julian Assange is promising significant disclosures as the secret spilling group marks its 10th anniversary today. Assange says WikiLeaks hopes to be publishing every week for the next 10 weeks on topics such as Google, the U.S. election, and mass surveillance. Assange spoke today by video link. He is being held refuge at the Ecuadorian embassy in London since 2012. UN Secretary General Ban Ki-moon is calling on the U.S. and Russia to resume talks on a ceasefire in Syria. Washington suspended diplomatic contacts with Moscow over ending the war in Syria. Ban told reporters in France today he's set to hold talks soon with Secretary of State John Kerry and senior Russian officials in Brussels. And police in Paris say they are analyzing footage from surveillance cameras to try to identify the five people who broke into a private apartment residence where reality star Kim Kardashian was staying and robbed her at gunpoint of more than $10 million in jewels. Authorities say the assailants wore fake police emblems on their jackets and escaped on bicycles. More news ahead on NPR News. The time now is 9:31.
Hi, I'm Chris Farrell. Join me for the next Conversations on the Creative Economy on October 14th with Joanne Jenkins, CEO of AARP. We'll discuss the mission and the business of ARP. Get your tickets now by going to nprnews.org/creative economy.
Programming is supported by Health Partners and MakeItOkay.org, a campaign to start conversations about mental illness and stop the stigma. You can learn more about the misconceptions around mental illness at MakeItOkay.org.
Support for this program comes from our members and from Alaris, a professional provider of banking, mortgage, retirement, and wealth management to individuals, families, and businesses. You can learn more about Alaris at Alaris.com.
And welcome back to NPR News and our discussion this morning about tonight's vice presidential debate. I'm Mark Sedeklik in for Kerry Miller today. We're on the line with University of Virginia history professor and co-host of Backstory with the American History Guys, Brian Ballow. And we are talking about the vice presidential candidates debate. You can hear that candidates debate tonight live at 8 o'clock on NPR News. You can also follow along online for real-time fact-checking at nprnews.org. And then at 10 o'clock, we're going to have a live nationwide call-in special from our partners at The Takeaway. So lots of vice presidential debate programming ahead today on NPR News. Professor Ballow, what about Governor Mike Pence? What do you think he needs to do tonight, given kind of where the Trump-Pence ticket is right now?
Well, I think he has the tough job of demonstrating to so-called suburban moms and also educated white voters that the Trump-Pence ticket is reasonable, rational, and can actually get things done in Congress. And I think he's in many ways the guy to do that. In fact, I think one of the reasons Donald Trump picked him is to do that. It is not Pence's fault that he's been overshadowed by his running mate's comments every time that Donald Trump goes off the teleprompter. Ironic, since Trump only a few months ago was making fun of people who use teleprompters.
All right, let's go to political reporter Matthew Nussbaum. He's in Richmond, Virginia, I think, this morning. Matthew, good morning.
Good morning. Thanks for having me on.
Thanks a lot for being here. What do you think Mike Pence's main job is between now and Election Day? He's been reaching out to the Republican establishment that Trump has spent so much time bashing. Is he getting anywhere?
So I think the main job starts tonight, which is to reset the narrative that's been playing out for the last week, which is basically a campaign in free fall since that debate against Hillary Clinton. And it's to roll out, you know, the policy proposals tonight, the on discipline, on message Mike Pence that everyone is used to, and try to help reset what's been going on the past week, and also maybe lay out a playbook for how Donald Trump can handle his debates going forward with Hillary Clinton.
We're talking about tonight's vice presidential candidates debate. For the first part of the show, we talked about Virginia Senator Tim Kaine. Now we're talking about Indiana Governor Mike Pence. And we'd love for you to join the conversation. If you have any thoughts about the debate, what you'll be watching for, why you might be tuning in, you can call us at 651-227-6000 or toll-free at 242-2828. Also, Steph Curtis is watching things at nprnews.org/live.
Yeah,
there we
live.
Go. And you're getting some reaction, right?
Yeah. Joe in Minneapolis says, Mike Pence is a vice presidential candidate in name only. He's, in fact, the Republicans' presidential candidate, as Trump himself said when he said he was going to give all domestic and foreign affairs policymaking ownership to Pence, so Trump himself can focus solely on, quote, making America great again.
All right. Matthew Nussbaum, what kind of a guy is Mike Pence, and how is he a different kind of a person and politician than Tim Kaine?
Well, he's sort of emblematic of what they call Hoosier hospitality. He's soft-spoken. He's mild-mannered. He doesn't really like to go on the attack. He's actually famous for this 1991 essay he wrote, Swearing Off Negative Campaigning. Obviously, that's had to be adjusted a little bit in this campaign, as he's had to go after Hillary Clinton and all that. But he's sort of a consummate Midwestern politician in a lot of ways. So the contrast with him isn't so much with Tim Kaine. They have a lot in common. But with Donald Trump himself, Pence spent 12 years in Congress. He's been governor of Indiana since getting elected in 2012. So he sort of brings this disciplined, policy-driven approach that you don't really see from Donald Trump. And tonight, he will be drawing some contrast with Tim Kaine, obviously contrasting their record and that sort of stuff you'd expect. But he's really going to be going after Hillary Clinton. That's where he's going to be aiming his fire tonight.
Matthew Nussbaum is here from Political. He's an expert on Indiana Governor Mike Pence, and we're talking about the vice presidential candidates debate tonight. We heard earlier that Tim Kaine did not have a long record of accomplishment in his brief time as governor of Virginia. What about Mike Pence? What's he done in Indiana?
Well, he's had a long record of controversy in his governorship as Indiana. He was in a really tight reelection battle this year against the opponent he beat in 2012. And got out of that battle, obviously, by hopping on the national ticket here. A lot of people said that he might have lost that race, which would have been incredibly damaging to his political career going forward, if not ending it altogether. The controversy people look at most is over a law called RFRA, Religious Freedom Restoration Act, which was seen as allowing businesses and restaurants to discriminate against gay and lesbian customers. Obviously, there's been these religious freedom debates in other states, but he signed a law that the critics looked like it would legalize that sort of discrimination. Mm-hmm. And there was a huge backlash from the business community, from activist groups, and they ended up sort of adjusting it a little bit, but not going all the way. So that controversy has really hurt his governorship and I think you'll hear about that tonight, though he obviously likes to focus more on economic issues. And Indiana's economy is actually doing pretty well.
He also signed one of the most restrictive abortion laws in the country. That coupled with the, some of the other things you're talking about, how much baggage does he bring to the ticket?
Well, I think the Democrats see an opportunity here to paint him as sort of a social conservative extremist, which will be a little harder when he's on the stage presenting his own version of himself. And Donald Trump, obviously, on social issues, one of the most liberal Republican nominees ever. So the Democrats have an opportunity to use their social issue attacks on Mike Pence. But it's unclear how effective that's going to be and how much they really want to do that. Of course, this election isn't about the vice presidential candidates. So I think Tim Kaine will mention RFRA. Maybe he'll mention abortion. But I think he wants to put Mike Pence on the defensive over things Donald Trump has done and said, try to see if he can get any daylight between the two of them, which he might be able to try to do on things like trade issues, the proposed Muslim ban. But you're going to see Mike Pence do everything he can to make sure that there's no difference visible between him and Donald Trump tonight.
I was at the Republican National Convention in Cleveland this year, and when Governor Pence was speaking, you know, getting reaction from some of the people in the crowd, they were very relieved that he was coming to the ticket. He's called himself a Christian, a conservative, and a Republican in that order. How important are these credentials, the Christian credentials, in shoring up support for Donald Trump? And has he been meeting with success? It sure seems like he has, if you look at the polls.
Yes, so he's been obviously a steadying force along with Kellyanne Conway, sort of running a more traditional campaign. It's almost like a separate operation, Pence and his aides running their campaign out here. And a big part of that, like you mentioned, has been outreach to conservatives who have been maybe a little wary of Donald Trump. So that includes Christian conservatives, that includes some folks in Congress, some more traditional economic conservatives. You know, there's a lot of different groups here that aren't totally on board with Donald Trump. And the group that Pence can best make inroads with is the Christian right. And he's had some success there. He's held events in churches. He's been doing outreach there. But the success has not been total, and there have been some serious gaps. Mike Ferris, for example, a prominent evangelical conservative, has hosted Pence twice now at events at both the conservative college he founded in Virginia and an event out west. And yet still, after both of those, reiterated his opposition to the ticket, so that he respects Mike Pence, but he's not supporting the ticket. So while that outreach has had some successes, Ted Cruz, for example, has been brought on board with some credit to Pence there, there are still some conservatives that he cannot win over.
All right, we're talking about the big vice presidential candidates debate tonight that you will hear live on NPR News beginning at 8 o'clock. Matthew Nussbaum is here from Politico, on the line from Richmond, Virginia, as well as University of Virginia History Professor Brian Ballow. We would like to hear from you as well. If you'd like to get in on the conversation, you can call us at 227-6000. That's 651-227-6000 in the metro area. Also, 1-800-242-2828. And Steph Curtis, you're watching things online at nprnews.org/live. What are people saying online?
And Eric has a really good question. He asks, do either of the campaigns have more to lose tonight if their VP candidate does poorly? Do we have any reason to think one or the other has a leg up when it comes to debates in general?
Let's put that out to Brian Ballow. Brian, what do you think?
I'm not sure I understand the question. Do either of the campaigns have more to lose? I guess I'd turn it around and say that the Trump-Pence campaign has more on the line because of the way momentum in the campaign is going right now. But I'm an historian. I'm gladly handed over to Matthew, who actually studies these things for a living.
What do you think, Matthew?
I think the Trump-Pence campaign definitely has a lot more on the line here. They're the ones with the bad narrative coming out of the first debate. So I think if it was even perceived as, Pence being slightly bested by Kaine tonight, that would just sort of keep the Democrats' momentum going. To the question of whether either campaign has a leg up, I don't think so. I think both Pence and Kaine have done a lot of these. They've never debated each other or I think even met each other in person, but they're both very seasoned politicians, a lot of time in office. We should not expect to see any major gaffes tonight. These guys both know what they're doing.
Wonderful. It is 17 minutes now before 10 o'clock. You're listening to NPR News. I'm Mark Zedeklikin this morning for Carrie Miller, and we're talking about the vice presidential candidates debate. If you want in on the conversation, give us a buzz at 651-227-6000 or 1-800-242-2828. Matthew Nussbaum, what about Governor Pence and the notion that Senator Kaine will be trying to tie him to everything Donald Trump has said? Is he in a position in any way to establish any distance between himself and the top of the ticket on anything?
Certainly not tonight. I think there might come a period, say, if they lose the election, when then there will be a rapid effort to draw differences there. But tonight's not the moment for that. Tonight he's going to do everything he can to defend Donald Trump's statements, to clarify some of them, to maybe make them else into something else entirely, as he's done in the past. But people will not see him saying any bigger difference between him and Donald Trump other than that they have different styles, which is how he sometimes pivots away when asked about some of the more controversial things Donald Trump has said. But you'll see him defending Trump's recent comments, maybe even defending some of this tax stuff, but also trying to pivot as quickly as possible and put Tim Kaine on the defense over some of Hillary Clinton's controversies.
All right, let's go to the phones. Greg is in St. Paul and wants to follow up on the abortion issue. Greg, thanks for calling. Good morning.
Hey, Mike, thank you for doing the show. I'd like to follow up on the professor's comments with regard to his thought that Kaine might bring up Pence's position on abortion. In as much as Mr. Kaine, Senator Kaine, rather, has a internal conflict within his mind and his religious upbringing and his active Catholicism, that he is opposed to abortion, while there's no party in America that's more in favor of abortion than the Democrats. And certainly Pence is holding true to his own belief as strongly as many Republicans are opposed to abortion. He seems to be the more authentic candidate in an age when pollsters are telling politicians, you know, you've got to be yourself. Doesn't Kaine really have the burden here as a guy that's got an internal conflict?
Very good. Greg, are you going to watch tonight? Is this exciting for you? Have you been anticipating it? How do you sort of rate it relative to the Trump-Clinton square-off last week?
Mike, I confess to being a political junkie. I was at the event with Tom Weber last night over at St. Thomas, and we try to get in all the politics we can.
All right. Well, thanks for calling in. We appreciate it. That debate, by the way, is going to be live on NPR News at 8 o'clock. Rich is in Virginia, Minnesota. And Rich, you don't think that this has much to do with the vice presidential candidates, but much more so to do with the top of the ticket, huh?
That is correct. And thanks for taking my call. But both of the presidential candidates, I mean, this debate is not worth watching because both of them are going to be putting their VPs in the back room, shut up, don't say anything. And we'll only open the door when you have to make your appearance. Trump, he doesn't listen to anybody, and Hillary has her own agenda, and he's not part of it. Kaine is not part of it. So to me, it's you know, only if one of them dies, you know, do you have a reason to listen to him.
But I bet you're going to listen. If you're listening to this program and you're calling in, I bet you're going to watch or listen to the debate tonight anyway, right?
No, I will not watch it. Not listen to it.
All right. Well, thanks for calling in, Rich. Have a good day. Stephanie Curtis, what's coming in online?
We finally found got a comment from a woman. I think it's the first woman we've heard from this hour. NPRnews.org/live is where Paula wrote in. She says, I'll be watching tonight, and I'm more curious to learn about Pence. If Trump wins the election, I have this feeling that he won't stay in office for the full term. His temperament would seem to suggest he'll get frustrated and quit. Trump is anything but a business-as-usual candidate. I think Pence could play a significant role, more significant role than most VPs, even if only as Trump's puppet.
Matthew Nussbaum, what do you make of that? That maybe Donald Trump wouldn't be happy 4 years in the White House and might leave it up to the vice president to serve out the term?
Well, there's all sorts of speculation, but I think what's certainly true is that Mike Pence would play a very important role as vice president. He's got deep relationships in Congress. He's already visited the Hill to sort of cultivate some of those relationships. He gave out his cell phone number in a meeting with the GOP senators and said, feel free to call me. He wants to sort of be the conduit to the Trump administration. And maybe even more importantly, GOP congressmen and senators want him to be the conduit. He's the guy that they're going to go to when they want to talk to the Trump White House. Hill Republicans really like Mike Pence because he's a traditional Republican. He holds a lot of their same views on a lot of the key issues that Trump might not be so steady on, or they might just not be familiar with him on. And they see Mike Pence as someone they can work with, someone they know, someone they can trust. And I think for all of Trump's priorities that need to go through Congress, Mike Pence will be playing a key role there. And he's already shown by having Paul Ryan introduce him at the convention, by endorsing Paul Ryan even when Trump was hesitant, that he really cares about those relationships and he's ready to work there. He can sort of be the bridge between the traditional Republican establishment in Congress and the everything but traditional Trump White House.
Matthew Nussbaum is a reporter for Political, and we're talking about the vice presidential candidates debate tonight. I'm wondering, Matthew, if you could talk about your perception of the relationship between Governor Pence and Donald Trump, and, you know, how often they're in touch. You know, I'm just wondering, what do you know about that?
Well, they're definitely an odd couple. I think everyone can see that. But they appear to have hit it off very well. They talk every day, usually once or twice a day by phone. Governor Pence told me that's usually 50-50 of who's calling who. And they typically campaign together about once a week. When they do, the governor will either ride on Trump's plane or ride in the motorcade with Trump. And I think Donald Trump's been impressed by Mike Pence's ability to go out there and defend him constantly. He said Pence has been one of the best choices he's made. So I think there is actually a real, genuine personal rapport there, in part because Mike Pence is a nice guy who gets along with a lot of people, Democrats and Republicans alike. And I think he's done a lot to earn Donald Trump's trust, earn his respect. And I think Trump goes to him for advice and is willing to listen to him or at least hear him out, even if not perhaps heeding that advice.
Matthew Nussbaum is a reporter for Politico. He's on the line from Richmond, Virginia this morning. And we also have the University of Virginia history professor, Brian Ballow. He's here on the line from Charlottesville, Virginia. And we have Nancy on the line in Plymouth, who is not a fan of Governor Pence. Good morning. Thanks for calling.
Richmond, Virginia, calling. And we also have the University of Virginia history professor, Brian Ballow.
I'm not sure what is going on with that. That's definitely not Nancy in Plymouth. You're listening to NPR News. We're talking about the vice presidential candidates debate. Steph Curtis is online at nprnews.org/live. What are you hearing?
Joe from Lake City, as opposed to Joe from Minneapolis, says, I think that Kane and Clinton need to focus tonight on quelling the doubters who want to vote for a third party. Frankly, more energy spent on what a disaster Trump is seems fruitless. If you still support him, you are supporting a lost cause.
All right, let's go back to the phone. Leslie is in St. Paul. This is interesting to me. You didn't watch the presidential debate, but you've blocked out time to watch the Veeps go at it. Why?
Yeah. The reason being, I didn't need to listen to the presidential debates because I already know for certain who I'm voting for, so there was no reason for me to waste my time. But I am listening tonight because I feel like I need to know both of these guys better. I know very little about either one of them, and I am very sad to say that given how much hatred and vitriol and polarization there has been in this campaign, I feel like there is a greater possibility than there's been for a very long time for an assassination attempt, no matter who wins. And so I feel like I need to know who these guys are. I just feel like in my lifetime, I've never seen so much hatred on both sides. And so if an assassination or assassination attempt were to occur, who these guys are is really going to matter. And so that's why I'm watching, just to get to know them better.
Very good. Well, thanks for calling in this morning. Brian Ballow, what do you make of the interest in the vice presidential candidates debate and the idea that maybe that somebody wouldn't fill out a term? I mean, is that something?
Well, I think we've heard two reasons suggested. The previous callers, not the first to suggest that Trump may lose interest. I personally think it's more likely, given his background, that he might be canceled than losing interest. But either way, that's one suggestion about Trump leaving office. And then Leslie just expressed concerns about assassination. I don't know that the likelihood is more than ever, but it's always a presence. And then third, both of the presidential candidates are up there in age. So health and mortality are always an issue, especially when you have candidates that old. And I think that is a good reason to listen. But I'll reiterate that many people have failed to notice that the vice presidency has become a more important position. I think Matthew, in going over some of Pence's strengths, stressed one of the key reasons. Vice presidents have become very important in terms of liaison with the Congress. And I agree with Matthew. Pence has those chops. I think Tim Kaine would have those chops as well. Vice presidents have become very important foreign ambassadors in a world that is increasingly global. Now, these kinds of things may not get the headlines on nightly news, but even if they remain just vice presidents, they've certainly come a very long way in terms of their importance. It was Spiro Agnew who said when he became vice president, oh, great, I get to go from being a potential unknown to an actual unknown. I think most vice presidents are known in office today, and I actually think they have quite a few responsibilities in office. So that's yet another reason to watch the debate tonight.
And Professor Bello, why? What's in it for Tim Kaine? What's in it for Governor Pence to hitch their wagon to these campaigns? Are they just interested in being vice president? Are they looking beyond that? Historically, why do people decide to do this? Because you are taking such a kind of a back seat to the main person on the ticket, and you have to pretty much agree with everything they think and that kind of thing. What's in it for the candidates?
Well, I think historically what's in it is prima facie. You become a potential candidate for president, win or lose in many ways. If Trump is defeated, and the polls are saying that now, although I'm certainly not ready to call the election, if Trump is defeated, I think if Mike Pence comports himself well and comes across well in this debate, he becomes a prima facie candidate for presidency 4 years from now. Likewise, we've heard from several of your listeners, they want to know more about both of these candidates. Certainly in the case of Tim Kaine, he's not a household name. And if he has ambitions for the White House, what better way to get name recognition and to become immediately a potential candidate if Hillary loses in 4 years, if Hillary wins in 8 years. He's a relatively young man.
Matthew Nussbaum, tell me how Mike Pence goes about reaching out to the establishment that Donald Trump is constantly going after, and then all the while having to toe the line in events like tonight's vice presidential debate, when Senator Kaine will be doing everything he can to attach everything Donald Trump has said to Mike Pence.
Well, it's a tough balance. A lot of his outreach to the Republican establishment has happened behind closed doors in private meetings, and the pitch involves saying that Donald Trump is a different guy in private and person than he is on stage, that the performer you see on stage is not the guy you see in private. That obviously is not the kind of pitch he can make on a debate stage to the American people. But I think you'll see sort of a reframing of a lot of Trump's past statements, of a lot of his positions, making them fall in line with more traditional Republican policy proposals. So we're going to cut taxes, we're going to end illegal immigration, we're going to stop ISIS. Those kind of promises can be made while avoiding the more controversial things Trump has said. I think if Mike Pence is talking about Alicia Machado, or if he's talking about unpaid taxes, that's a bad sign. I think if he's talking about those things, he's losing.
All right. Well, Matthew Nussbaum from Politico, thanks a lot for talking to us this morning about tonight's big debate, and I hope you enjoy watching it.
Thanks for having me on.
Take care. Still here is University of Virginia history professor Brian Vallow. He is in Charlotte. Talk about the vice presidential debates of past and times when candidates stood out. I remember Ross Perot's running mate kind of questioning who he was and why he was on stage. Talk a little bit about some of the more notable vice presidential debates in history here.
I think one of the more notable debates was between Geraldine Ferraro, the first female vice presidential candidate, and George H.W. Bush back in the 80s. And you know, what's remembered from that debate was that Bush came across as being somewhat patronizing, almost lecturing Geraldine Ferraro on foreign policy, for instance, given Bush's extensive resume in that field. And I think Ferraro, you know, gave it right back to him. She, in essence, stood her ground and demonstrated a kind of gravitas that people were not sure she could before that debate.
It's certainly the case that a vice presidential candidate's debate can have consequences, though, right?
You know, the pollsters will tell you not so much. And in fact, they'll say that for many of the presidential debates as well. I think certainly with presidential debates, they can change the momentum of campaigns. And we've seen that just this week with the first presidential debate. I think that's less the case with vice presidents because not as many people watch. And secondly, you know, they're not the top of the ticket. So even if there are moments that people remember, it's less likely to change the outcome of the presidential race.
All right, sir. Well, thanks so much for taking time to spend with us on the radio here this morning at Minnesota Public Radio. That's University of Virginia history professor Brian Ballow. You're listening to NPR News. I'm Mark Zadeklik in for Carrie Miller.